Hello, hello. Welcome to the Mother Days podcast. I am one of your hosts, Sarah Wright Olson.
And I'm Teresa Palmer. Hi, Daisies.
Hi, Daisies. We are
very excited and honored to have our guest today, Jessica Diggs. What a joy. I know, Sarah, that you two have known each other for a long time. And Sarah told me that you would be the most magnificent guest. And we cannot wait to chat to you. So thank you for joining us today.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Do you know how much cashback you're leaving on the table settling for the wrong credit card? Imagine earning up to 5% cashback on your groceries for the next 30 years. Think of all that cashback on those overpriced kombuchas. NerdWallet helps everyone make smarter financial decisions today that future you will thank you for. With NerdWallet, you won't regret missing out on rewards. NerdWallet lets you compare smart cashback credit cards side by side to make the most of your everyday spending. So what could future you do with more cashback? Splurge on some fancy champagne with the gals, or order fine dining to the house and watch a good true crime doco? Whatever it is, make it happen with a smarter cashback credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
I met Jessica so many years ago. My very first baby was like a year and a half, I think, at the time. And our mutual friend, Ana Paula Markel, who's a doula, introduced me. And I was looking to figure out, like, I needed help. I was going to shoot a movie. I needed help with Wyatt. And she was like, let me throw you a couple of doula friends of mine and see if anybody can, like, make it happen. And so Jessica was available for only part of it, and I met with somebody else. And so we just stayed in touch because I loved her so much. And I was like, you are such a light. And Wyatt loved you instantly. He was just like, oh, she's so magical. And so throughout the years, I've just been watching your evolution of, like, you know, you started as a doula and then you started training to be a midwife, and you have this amazing practice and education. And I just love everything that you put out into the world. So I'm so excited to have you on today. And I would love to hear about your journey from like becoming a doula, like what inspired you, and then transitioning to midwifery care.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. It's been so long since seeing Wyatt. I became a doula in 2012. So I was 19 years old.
And, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I was a baby, but I had a deep fascination with reproductive health and particularly sexual health around that time. More so, like, I was a girlfriend that you asked all the questions about your body and what was going on. And if a friend had a bump on their ass, I was the person who's going to look at it. I was just really, really fascinated with our bodies. And then I was equally fascinated with the fact that we didn't know as much about it. There was a lot of questions that all my friends had. So I worked at a women's health information clinic and got to talk to people about their bodies and give out information about breastfeeding and skin to skin, because everyone in that hospital had to come see us.
Oh, wow.
And we talked about doulas all the time. And I knew my script of what they did, of like, oh, these people welcome into the hospital. And they didn't count as a visitor in the visitation policy. Mm. Yes. And I was like, who are these magic humans that don't count as visitors and why? And I did some deep dive, like one Christmas break or something, and fell in love and trained the following February. And been going to births ever since. I thought I would be an OB. I was like, oh, I want to be a provider. And then I fell in love with the midwifery model and just like the physiology of birth and really giving people choice and option. And I moved to LA and I was like, I think I'm just gonna be a midwife instead of an OB. And wow. fell in love and kept going to births the whole time. I've been to so many births in the last 10 years. So many.
You're tired. Wow. You're so tired.
Oh my god, so tired.
But it's so amazing. it's the coolest job. It's deeply, deeply inspiring to watch women and families come into their own and come into their power over and over again. It doesn't get old. No two births are the same. Yeah. And now I get to do this on a smaller scale as a home birth midwife, but I still get to teach a lot of families on a larger scale with platforms and writing and things, which I'm really, really loving.
Yeah, I was like doing a deep dive through some of your articles. And I think, you know, this is why I was getting so pumped up and excited, because I think there's a lot of stuff that just isn't common knowledge, right? Like, first of all, you know, there's so much to unpack from what you just talked about, because you having this interest in sexual health, like, I'm from Kentucky, I grew up in a small town, like the words sexual health were not something that we ever discussed, right? Mm-hmm. And sex was like one of those things where you're just like, oh, that's just something you don't do and you wear a promise ring and we don't talk about it, so taboo. Like, there's a lot of STDs out there. You will get them. You kiss someone, you're going to get it, right?
You kiss someone, you get pregnant. That's what I was told as a Catholic girl.
Exactly. So, you know, you first of all, like, you at 19 and you have this interest in the body. And when I see somebody like that, you know, because we also have this amazing conversation with Rumor Willis, and she similarly to you had this, like, she has this drive for the body and sexual health and just understanding and educating people. And I think that that is amazing, because I think that there's just so much that we don't know. And so as I was deep diving into your Substack, I was like, oh, this is fascinating, because you're talking about things that I think are a little bit like people look at as like, ooh, this is taboo, when it's actually, it should be such a natural part of our lives and understanding. And I feel like I didn't really start understanding my body, my sexuality, my libido, like any of those things until way, way, way later.
And then I would never talk to a doctor or a midwife or anyone. I didn't even know that you should have conversations like that. And I would be totally nervous to have a conversation like that. I've like never even brought any of that stuff up. And then so we're reading your stuff and I'm like, oh my gosh, this should be a conversation. Like,
yes.
You should feel comfortable to go to your care provider or your midwife and be like, I'm feeling like this and I like no longer want to have sex. Or like, I like had such a... because I was raised Catholic and I had a lot of Catholic guilt surrounding like sexual health or sexuality at all. I had a lot of trauma surrounding that. And like even having sex for the first time was a really big deal. And like masturbation was very taboo. So all of that felt very dark and like scary for me. Like I want to hear about like what those conversations are. How do you create a space that feels safe to be able to like entice people to open up in that way? Because it is a bit of a delicate conversation. I love the way you write about it. So could you just talk to our listeners a little bit about your practices in that area?
Yeah. So I truly believe pleasure is just as much as a vital checkpoint in any care that I offer. So whether it's prenatal care, postpartum care, or gynecological care. So midwives can see people in the entire reproductive spectrum, which people don't realize. They often think we only do birth. I do see people for woman care, annual visits, pap smears, all the things. And to me, checking in on whether we are enjoying ourselves in our bodies, but also when we engage in sexual experiences is important. It reduces this idea that women are just made to procreate or just exist for someone else's pleasure and not our own. And we also put that on ourselves in many ways as well. So
when we're
coming to check in on our bodies, it's also like, are you enjoying being in your body? Are you enjoying your sexual encounters? I see a lot of people in their mid-20s to early 40s. So it's often that prime time where they're just learning for the first time, similar to Sarah. They may be in a committed relationship or they're still dating in Los Angeles, which is a whole shit show of its own. So I'm like, if you're in this, if you're in that hellscape, then at least we can enjoy some aspects of it. So for me, I spend a lot of time every time they come in, they know they have a full hour. It's not a rush conversation. We spend a lot, at least 30 minutes just checking in. And as we're checking in, they're getting more comfortable. I always add, like, I want to know about your cycle. I want to know about your vitamins, all the things, but also tell me about your sexual encounters. You can tell me as much detail or as little, but I will also want to know, like, are you enjoying yourself? And then I ask, are there any pain points, whether that's physical or emotional or traumatic? And people have never been asked. So they often are shocked by the question. They're like, oh. And I'm like, yeah, whatever you want to share. And they were just like, okay. And then I'll get, if I'm finding that some people are very coming into themselves sexually. And so some folks are like, finally, I can tell somebody. And they tell me everything. And then some folks are like, what do you mean? So I'm like, are you having an orgasm? Are you having sex as often as you'd like? Are you and your partner may not be having sex as often as you think you should, but you actually are in a comfortable space, which is also fine. And just give them a couple pointed questions, and then they're like, and then they start to kind of tell me more. And then I see a lot of teens, which is how I actually started asking this question. It's because we all come from our different backgrounds and from the South. And, you know, culture, religion, internet right now with the teens have a big impact on what they do and how they feel about their bodies. And so I saw a few teens when I was in school, so probably 5 years ago now. And she it was like pulling teeth to get questions as any conversation is with a teenager. I'm trying to be cool, but I'm also not trying to be too cool, because then it's like I was like, my who I am, she doesn't care about. Like, there's no clout that exists that will make me feel cool to this person. And I'm like, okay, so I'm very intimidated already, and I'm just like trying to like, what's going on? Nothing you say will be shared to your parents, which her mom knew. And she gave me a little here and there, here and there. And then towards the end, she was like, can I ask you anything? And I was like, yes, you can ask me anything. And then she was like, okay, so anal. And I was like,
You're like,
I kept it together, but I was like,
yes. Yes. Okay. Let's discuss.
And when she asked you this question, what did you say?
I gave her my all of my things. I'm like, tell me more. All the tips, all the tools, all the precautions. Answered all of her questions, and like she kept opening up. And so towards the end, I was like, are you enjoying your encounters? Like, because some stuff is like, you saw it on TikTok, you saw, he saw it in porn. Like, I want to make sure you're enjoying what you're doing and choosing to do. And she was like, yes, but I never had a big O. It's like, I would never have phrased it that way, but okay.
But she read that somewhere.
Yes.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. So as your kids get older, some things about parenting gets easier, right? So we're not up in the middle of the night a million times, potentially, and they can start cleaning up after themselves. They can do some vacuuming and they can help out around the house. Okay, so then other things don't, like having conversations about money. Well, the fact is kids won't really know how to manage their money until they're actually in charge of it. And that is where Greenlight can help.
With the Greenlight app, kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun, accessible way. The Greenlight app also includes a chores feature where you can set up one-time or reoccurring chores customized to your family's needs, and then you reward kids with an allowance for a job well done. I was thinking about this and I was like, oh, I remember being a child and my chore was I had to unload the dishwasher every day. Did I get pocket money, Sarah? No, I did not. Things are different these days. And millions of people and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It is the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together.
I feel like that knowledge is so empowering, and being able to give them this access is just going to make them feel so good when they go to purchase something or donate to a charity or whatever it is. So sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/motherdays. That's greenlight.com/motherdays to try Greenlight for free. greenlight.com/motherdays.
Do you know how much cashback you're leaving on the table settling for the wrong credit card? Imagine earning up to 5% cashback on your groceries for the next 30 years. Think of all that cashback on those overpriced kombuchas. NerdWallet helps everyone make smarter financial decisions today that future you will thank you for. With NerdWallet, you won't regret missing out on rewards. NerdWallet lets you compare smart cashback credit cards side by side to make the most of your everyday spending. So what could future you do with more cashback? Splurge on some fancy champagne with the gals, or order fine dining to the house and watch a good true crime doco? Whatever it is, make it happen with a smarter cashback credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
And it just got me to thinking how many times not even a teenager, but even in my early 20s, like, who actually cared if I was enjoying my experiences?
That's right.
Totally.
And no one's asking. Gosh. And so right. I was like, I should ask every person I see, are you enjoying yourself?
Yeah.
And then that can, you know, why not could be a wide range of things, from past trauma, from I just had a baby and I'm not feeling good in my body, mm-hmm. to yes. they just don't know what they're doing and I don't know how to yeah. tell them. And a conversation around like asking for your needs and not having expectations from your partner. And it's forever changed my practice. I asked everybody.
I feel like I wish I had met you so long ago, because I didn't even know that like sex could really be pleasurable, like until I was a lot older. And I actually realized that so much of it for me is being really comfortable with my person. And it wasn't really until I found my husband that I was like, oh my gosh, you can be so free and comfortable and feel love. And like, this is how it's meant to feel. Yeah. It took me finding my person to feel like that. And I really realize now that I had so much kind of untapped sort of guilt. I didn't look at like the reasons why sex wasn't that pleasurable, and that it was more like, oh, you're in a relationship, you're supposed to do these things, so we'll just have sex. And even though like it's probably more for them than it is for me, like if I'd met you or someone like you at a younger age, I would have been like, wait a second, what, this is all wrong, we need to change things up. So I love that you're empowering people at such a young age as well, and really opening up that conversation, because especially as a teenager, the idea that my parents would ever find out what I was doing with dudes, like that just, I didn't talk to anyone about it. Sometimes my friends, but even then it was like very quiet. I didn't feel like that's a conversation that I should have with anyone. So I love that. What an amazing practice. And was that born out of feeling like when you're a teenager, you had a space to talk about that, or was your experience a little bit different and you realized like, oh, hang on a second, we need to change things around here?
Yeah, I actually had a pretty safe space. My mom was very open. We had a pretty open house. Like we could do anything. I had a very strict dad in terms of like what we're doing. They also weren't stupid. My parents were teen parents, so they were also like,
yes,
they're very in tune with what's happening in the world. they're not far removed.
Love it.
So they were strict in the sense of like, you know, no boys staying over, no boys in that capacity. But they're sort of stupid. Like, you're going to date. My mom told my dad very explicitly, you have three girls. They're going to be stupid over a guy at least once, at least.
Yes.
How smart you deem your girls are, they're going to be stupid because of a boy. So prepare yourself. So we had very open conversations and I felt safe enough to share. So I did tell my mom after I lost my virginity. And wow. Chatterbox. She was like quiet for like a 45-minute car ride. And I was like, are you okay? And she didn't talk about it for like a week and then she brought it back up. But she basically was what shocked. She's like, I didn't think you liked him that much. She was a different guy. She was shocked by the person.
Oh my God.
She was hung up on the wrong thing.
And then the one thing I remember is like, it gets better with age. They get better with age.
Yeah. Wow.
And I was like, okay. Interesting. It's funny, my partner's 20 years older. So I was like, yes. Yes, so.
Thanks, Mom.
But that did strike me as like, why does it get better with age? Is it myself that is improving and understanding more? Or I can't believe it's the men. It's just this person. I'm like, no, it can't be them. And so I think that has impacted me, but I did have a safe space to talk about it. And our house was that for my friends and my sister's friends. Like my mom was that person. So I know the value of that.
I want to be that mom.
Yeah.
I know. I'm like, I need like a re-education on how to be like that. Cause I do find that like, even when I'm, you know, I do the thing that my mom did, like when something happens in a movie and I'm like, oh, you know, and I'm like, wait, what? I'm doing the thing.
Oh my God.
You know? Practice your facial expressions.
I know. I'm like, I need a re-education because I'm such a freaking square. But by the way, Jess, I asked an OBGYN one time about exactly what that girl is asking about. I can't even say it. I just was like, I asked her, there's this thing people are talking about. Like, what do you think about that? And she was like, this was her response. You ready for this? She goes, it's an exit. It's not an entrance. And I was like,
oh my gosh.
Oh, okay. I'm afraid. And I was like, okay, no problem. I'm sorry I asked anything. Then I sweated so much before I asked her that question, but I was just like, I don't know. You hear things and I was curious and I was young. And so I was like, I'm just going to do it. Ask the question. She was like, it is an exit, not an entrance. And I was like,
yeah,
okay.
Okay.
Yeah, not going to do that.
Thank you. It's harm reduction. It's like people are gonna try stuff on the internet. You think people are like, not even sex related. People drink, kids are taking the Tide capsules. Like, people are stupid. They're gonna try.
Oh my God. Yeah, they do things. Stupid stuff. That's
and then
true. You're right.
Are curious, and they're going to explore. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's harm reduction to give you tools to explore safely. So that you aren't, you can cause a lot of harm if done incorrectly for any type of sexual experience.
Right.
And so I tend to lean that way versus shaming people. I'm like, tell me, I've heard it all. I may not try it all myself, and that's my personal choice, but I want to make sure you have enough tools to explore in a safe space that feels good for you. Starting with consent, like, do you actually want to do it? And they're like, yeah, okay. And then giving them so many tools versus shaming them. We talked a lot about, so a lot of parents bring their teens in. One, they're avoiding the conversation. They don't want to do it, which I'm like,
yes.
Or they know that they're sexually active and then they want a CI panel. And sometimes it's necessary. Sometimes it's like, no, these two have only had sex with themselves. We don't really need to check them for things.
Right.
She's clearly communicating that. And I don't want to bother their bodies if I really don't have to, like from a pap smear. Like, I don't have to do certain things. So I get a lot of information and give. And so realizing that her partner was actually really, really, really big on condoms. Like, he never not used them, which I was like, that's awesome. Like, this 17-year-old, like, that's amazing. And then she's like, but do we need one for anal? And so, like, those types of questions, there's not a lot of good resources out there. And I'm like, still do for sexual transmitted diseases, not pregnancy. yay, but you know, for different reasons. And she's like, okay, that's clarifying. Okay. And then I was like, get a lube. And if you're a teenager, sourcing your lube, like the wrong stuff can cause really, really big issues for her vagina and her body.
Yeah.
And so trying to have all of those conversations so that ideally we're reducing the amount of harm and horrible experiences that like people have all the time around, you know, new sexual tries.
Well, what you were saying about about it getting better with age is, you know, I'm so with Teresa. Like, it wasn't until I met my husband where he was the first person to be like, you know, what does it for you? Like, you know, do you feel how can I, you know, he was asking all the questions that make me sweaty and go like, what? And he's like, what is your body like? And like, what, you know, questions that are amazing and open and beautiful between partners. And I was literally like, deer in headlights. I don't know what my body likes.
I'm not
like,
same, I don't know. Sarah, like, same.
What are you talking about? And why are you asking me?
I don't talk about this.
Right. And I'm like, aren't we just supposed to turn off the lights and like get naked? So, you know, and he's 7 years older than me, but he was just like so beautiful about it. And from, you know, we started dating when I was like 22. And it was really like throughout my relationship with him that I started to understand my body. I do think that there's something really beautiful when you find a partner that you can, but that doesn't always exist, right? You're going to come into this with certain people and it's going to be a little bit of like, how do you feel? How do I feel? Like working together on it. And it would be so nice for younger people to be able to have, and maybe they do. But like for me, it wasn't like that. Or even people maybe who are in their 30s or 40s or 50s who haven't had these conversations. Because, you know, when Teresa and I were talking before this, I was like, wow, like I feel like after reading all of your stuff, like it'd be so awesome to take our teenage daughters to come see a midwife versus taking them to this like very medical feeling OBGYN office where it's like, okay, let's go run some tests and let me give you birth control. And like, you know, like it was for me, it felt sterile and scary. And so I think, you know, like, are you starting to see more teens now? Because you were saying that you're seeing them when you were in school, but are you seeing more teenagers now?
Yeah, I definitely see more teens in my practice now. A lot for their very first visit ever. Oh, oftentimes, they're not even doing any clinical work. Every now and then, we'll do some, you know, run some labs or just check in on their overall body if they haven't seen like their pediatrician for a while. But the majority of that conversation is usually them asking questions, and parents can stay in, but I say if they don't, then I always disclose in front of them and in front of the team that nothing they ask me is going to be shared with their parents. So they truly know it's confidential, and parents also have the expectation I'm not sharing what they share. And then the only thing that we will talk through sharing is if something is a health concern. And so, I see quite a few teens, and then they are the only patients that can text me because they're not checking their emails. So, I give them my cell number.
Oh my God, I love it.
They can text. My normal patients can text here and there, but like, I'm not having a conversation via text with them. And then they get one friend question and one TikTok question every so often. So like there's something they saw on TikTok and they're like, is this real? And I'm like, okay, one question a month.
What an amazing resource that you are for them. That. Like, come on. That's incredible.
It's fun for me. I'm always like, what do TikToks? No.
Oh my gosh. I'm like, this is why I'm terrified of TikTok. I mean, I'm like, no.
I did a teen doula training and we had a whole TikTok section because every other question was, I saw this on TikTok or TikTok's it. And it was like,
oh my gosh. Okay,
we have to have a solid conversation. But I would say 75% of it was not inaccurate information. Whoever is curating some of the stuff on the platform is not bad. It is just easy to get information quickly. And so I'm just teaching them how to fact check, essentially. But yeah, wow. And then I also like, you can't, your friends can't ask me questions through you because I'm not a provider. And I want to make sure their parents are also on board with them having information from someone else, because that can get hairy very quickly. But I, like, to your point, Sarah, you said something, being in your head. And it's like, it's not a bad thing. It is actually very, very, very normal for women to stay in their brain, the frontal cortex, during sex. We don't pop into our hindbrain as quickly as men do when we're aroused, which is why, like, particularly mothers have a harder time getting back into the zone, because you have a million things on your to-do
list. We need to talk about that.
So it is not because something's wrong, you're prude or anything. Part of it is...
Thank you.
You're welcome. Part of it is our stress. It's like a space of stress. And it doesn't have to be like big external, you know, crisis. It is anything that's in our brain that is causing us anxiety or making us think we will stay in that brain. Men, those penises get hard and they've lost all brain function. So like, they can pop, into.
Seems that way.
Yeah. Like,
huh, that tracks.
They can pop into arousal and be there. You typically need a little bit more workup to get there. So I usually tell my postpartum partners, I'm like, if you really want to get in the mood, wash the dishes, put the child down. Send her off to take a shower, and then she can actually pop into that brain. If she has to do the things, it's going to take her a lot longer to get there. And it can be as simple as your Catholic upbringing and a thought about insert thing. It can be a past experience that was negative and it's just replaying. It can be anything. And so trying to figure out, one, creating a safe space with this partner where you can talk about it. Which communication is not sexy, is not viewed as sexy in our like hookup culture. It's just like, no, you just do it. You're supposed to know what happened. It's like, that's just not true. We've all lived through that experience. It's not true.
That's right.
And it's probably why you're probably having better sex with your partners, because you have such a great communication with them that translates into safety, where now you can be free enough to be yourself. So I usually tell people, like, start workshopping, like, how to talk to people. And, like, we'll literally role play. I don't do this in my practice as much because I'm pretty sure people probably think it's weird. But with girlfriends, like, how to actually say, I like this, and get that need met with anyone from a hookup to a long-term partner.
I love this so much because I feel like I needed this right now, because yesterday I was talking to my husband. We went on a little date and we started talking about like past stuff. And, you know, I was like, you know, I've been really reflecting on this relationship I had when I was younger. And this guy was very sexually experienced. And I was like coming out of my like Catholic era of like feeling ashamed about thinking sexy thoughts, like wanting any sort of pleasure. I just like was carrying a lot of shame. And he's like, he knew that. And so he wanted to try all these things to sort of break me out of it. And I feel like at that young age, I didn't really have a voice. I sort of had the thoughts that you were saying. I'd have the thoughts of like, oh, this feels weird. Like, oh my God, this is too much. Like, I don't know if I'm fully comfortable with this. But I didn't. I just sort of went along with it because I was like, I have an older lover and he's like experienced and he's helping me break down these barriers that I have. And like, I should just go with this. And I was telling my husband, I was like, oh man, I really wish I could go back to those experiences and be like, do you know what? I totally get why you want to try that. But actually, I'm not feeling that. It's not sexy to me. Well, it doesn't actually feel good. I kind of feel a bit uncomfortable. But I didn't say those things. And in this like day and age where we talk about consent, like it just seems so valuable that you're opening up these conversations with people where they can feel brave enough to have a voice to be like, oh, actually, I don't really want to try that.
Yeah.
And that doesn't actually make me feel comfortable because I think so many people feel like I should just go along with this thing that we're doing and that's what we're supposed to do. And I remember when I lost my virginity, that was the reason I lost my virginity, was like, I should just do this because other people my age are doing this. And like, I guess this is the thing to do.
Right.
So
I love that. Like, I really love that you're empowering these people. And I hope to take from this podcast, and I hope other listeners do as well, how to initiate those conversations with our own children. And having the sort of environment that your mother created for you and your parents yes. created for you to be able to say, like, I'm trying this or I'm thinking of this. And like, what should I say in this sort of situation? Because I really hope my kids come to me and I can equip them with the tools that you are equipping your clients with.
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts, but to the conversations about the kids, and I want to come back to the conversation around sharing your need and vocalizing that. So we'll come back to that. But mm-hmm. I will say, starting with creating safe spaces to talk about anything outside of sex, just like those conversations now. Yeah. I just did a teen doula training, and one of the biggest things we navigated was like friends whose parents are going through a divorce. It's a taboo thing. Mm. It's touchy. It's you know, creating a safe space for your kids to talk to you about, you know, what they're hearing their friends navigate, and you giving them tools or holding space for them to be a safe space for their friends, and your house being a safe space for that friend. Like, that is kind of one that's super prevalent because divorce rate is really high. And parent split, it happens. So like that, creating a safe space for any situation and any conversation will then trickle over to my parents have demonstrated that they're a safe space. They don't lose their shit when I bring up stuff from video games to the pet or whatever it is. I can now trust them with this level of vulnerability. And so I would say start with just being a safe space for anything and trying to stay as neutral, and then also being human and being like, hey, bud, this is uncomfortable, but I also want to make sure you feel comfortable sharing with me. So if you ever do, I can deal with my own emotions. Don't feel like you need to hold those for them, because they're your kids. They do care. So they will try to avoid making you upset, especially your boys, your girls.
Yeah.
So like, you know.
Yeah, true.
So it's like starting there and just not stressing it. And then you have partners like. Sometimes it's a divide and conquer, and it is more of you might get information via them, but making sure you're creating like space for them to be like, we can talk about anything. Or movies. Movies was a big way in which we talked about stuff. I remember very vividly our house being split down the middle around abortion conversation as a teenager.
Yeah.
And it was something on TV we watched, and like, you know, our parent, we were just talking about what would we do and how do we feel about this, and our house being pretty split, and respectable split. And she's like, I feel like not necessarily political, but like our personal choices. And so I remember that conversation. I was like, I was definitely either late middle school, early high school. So as you, if stuff come up in the world, have the conversations over dinner and keep it neutral, and they'll understand like, oh, we can talk about the tough stuff. And as it pertains to my body, we can talk about the tough stuff. And then I would say, especially once they get to middle school, just maybe once a year, be like, we're always a safe space. Whether it's like partying or anything, always call. There's no repercussions for calling. I will always come get you no matter what time it is, whatever the case is. Same thing around sex. It's like, call. My partner's kids are older. There's just condoms. Like, he has two boys. Like, just here. Like, just keep them available so they know.
Yeah.
I wanted to circle back because, Teresa, you mentioned an experience that many of us have been in where we are choosing to do something. And I wouldn't say it's full consent because it's not usually enthusiastically, but we're saying we're going along with it because we think we're supposed to. We're curious, but we're not necessarily enthusiastic about it. And there usually needs to be a little bit more conversation to like get truly on board. Or a safe space to truly feel comfortable enough to say no. And it's not uncommon, especially in first encounters, from just consenting to having sex from peer pressure. It's like, you wouldn't have had that idea without the peer pressure. To trying something new with a partner, no matter how long you've been with them, and you're excited to please them, but not necessarily about it, excited about it for yourself. And
exactly,
a lot of us have been in that. This is one of those times, Sarah, when the overthinking is helpful, because it is one of those superpowers as women that is protective. We know when we're not in a good space to feel completely comfortable. Some of that can be very benign little things. Some of that can be, it can be big red flags, and the body is telling us like, no, no, no. So I usually tell people, if something is coming up, there's anxiety around it, trying to pause. If you're truly in a safe situation and you're like, I'm just uncomfortable saying no, then it's like taking a deep breath, maybe excusing yourself to go to the bathroom, and at least give physical space, and then trying to say, I don't know if I'm feeling this. It'll ruin the mood enough where it at least gives them a pause of like, oh. And if they're a decent human, they also are going to be like, oh, okay, let me unpack this a little bit more. And it can be as simple as, I don't know why, but I would like a little bit more time to figure it out. Maybe I'll say yes, but I need some space. And that usually creates enough space in a safe situation where it's awkward, but it's fine. I'd rather be awkward and not do something I don't want to do than be awkward during it. It happens. In my LA dating days, horrible. It was rough out here. It was fun, actually. Yeah. I had like my bachelorette pad, but it was rough. But I had an experience where it wasn't bad. He was kind. But I was very much excited and he was just not delivering. And I was like laying there like in my head thinking like, this is horrible. Why am I doing this?
Oh my God.
What are you doing to my body? How are you getting it this wrong? And I was like, that was just like getting louder and louder. And I like had the thought of like, I'm not enjoying myself. Why am I saying yes? And I'm in a safe enough situation where I can say no. And it was like a pep talk in my brain. I was like, just stop him. And I stopped him, poor guy. I was like, it's not good. Like, I can't be more elegant. I was like, this is not good. He was like, really? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, shocked, because no one has ever told him that whatever he was doing was not good.
Was not working. Right.
And he was like, oh, people, I was like, I don't know. And he was like, you want me to go? And I was like, yeah. Because it was just awkward.
You're like, yeah, can you?
You're like, it's time for this to end.
But like, he ended up texting. He was like, I would love to learn more. Do you have anything? I was like, you're not going to learn on me, but here's a couple links.
Oh my God.
And ideally, we are engaging in sexual encounters where the people are similar to this dude. It's like, it's embarrassing. It's unnerving for everyone involved.
Right.
But when you remove yourself from the situation, you're like, actually, I do need to learn more, whether it is you for your own self or them about just skill. My answer to most people who are already engaging in sexual experience is taking more from the BDSM community. Not my cup of tea, but the kink community has really, really, really good consent and communication around what is a go and what is a not. And there's worksheets, like I sent one to a friend of mine who recently divorced, 40s and back in the dating scene, bless her, around how to communicate it. Because she's like, it was not well in her marriage. And now she has to tell people about what she likes. And she's like, I don't fucking know. So I'm like, here's a worksheet. Literally fill out the worksheet. If it's just like hookups, then you can just paraphrase and use some of the verbiage to communicate. When someone asks you, what are you into? Look at your sheet. Or if it's actually in a relationship, doing it together can also be fun and sexy. And this dude has a cheat sheet of how to get you off. Like, what man doesn't
No, exactly.
And now, like, for clients, and they're trying to, you know, explore again, especially my first timers after a baby, and they're worried about sex. Go to the cheat sheet with no expectation of actually getting laid after this, but like understanding this is where I'm feeling, this is how I'm feeling in my body. This feels good. This doesn't anymore. And it can be a nice just reconnect with your partner as life changes, bodies changes, libidos change. But that's just the BDSM community. And it's not, it, nothing on the sheet is like explicit to that. It's just, it gives them a safe space to actually write in what I like, what I don't.
That's such great information. Like, what a great source of information. I didn't even know that there was like a worksheet you could look at. How awesome. I love it. Like, just like having the parameters. Like, here's my little sheet. It's like your birth plan when you're like, hand over your
birth plan. Here's my birth plan. Like, here's sex my plan. Sex plan.
Oh my God. I love it.
Oh my God. Maybe we should together create a sex plan.
A sex plan. Yeah. This is the vibes. You just brought up something I wanted to ask you about, which was like sex again after you've had a baby. And I just wanted to explore the postpartum world a little bit with you, because you write about postpartum and postpartum depression. And I have a girlfriend that just had a baby, and she was like, I do not want to have sex again for a long time. She feels very touched out. She's like, definitely not feeling it. And I can relate. I remember that. I still, even 2 years postpartum, I have four kids at home. Like, the idea of like rolling into bed and like getting it on, I'm just like, I am so tired. I cannot find my libido. What's your advice?
Maybe it's in the closet. Maybe your libido's in the closet.
Maybe it's in the closet. Maybe it's
in the shower. Or maybe it's like hooking up in the car or something.
I really want to have it in the shower. My husband refuses to shower with me. I'm like, that is where I want to have sex. I want to have sex.
And he's in like, there. No.
He does
take
not
that vibrator. Get in the shower.
Get in the freaking shower. It is waterproof. I got the waterproof one. It's like, come on. Yes. No, but he.
Honestly, that's it. That's parent sex.
Yeah.
I mean, correct. Oh my gosh. Some negotiation there, like some in the shower, some wherever he prefers. But I think Sarah's onto it. It's like parent sex is often a lot more spontaneous and not usually in the bed at night, because as the day wears on you, you don't want to have sex. Like, it's just, I'm tired. Right. I prefer to sleep.
Totally.
And there's probably a child or two attached to you or in the bed or coming in, especially. And so if you have four, like, I can count probably how many days you sleep in the bed with just y'all two. Like,
last night, my 9-year-old was sleeping along like the bottom half of the bed. He literally like came and slept that way. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what? My 9-year-old's in the bed now? Oh my God. It was, and thank God the other two didn't crawl in, but I had like the baby and the 9-year-old, and I was like curled up in a little fetal position. It ain't happening in the bed.
Yeah. Especially that with a 9-year-old. If they're tinier, potentially, but no. I usually tell people if they're newly postpartum, first things first is exploring their own bodies for just them. Get into your body for yourself. So before you're even thinking about letting your partner touch you, penetrative sex, like, touch yourself, take your vibrator, and just see what it feels like. What it feels like to have an orgasm, what it feels like to touch yourself. Is there any pain points? Is there any areas that you're just like, I feel insecure about? Or any new areas, like, I'm really loving my new boobs, I'm really loving my new ass, whatever it is, like, definitely hype yourself up. And then having a conversation, not with sex on the agenda, but over lunch with your partner, not at your house, because like their brains go bye bye dimensions. So like, we're in public. I'm just like, hey, this is what's coming up for me. And this is how I'm feeling in my body. And this is where I'm feeling insecure, unsafe, or I'm scared. And then at some point, you're going to want to unpack that with them. And some of the things that I tell partners specifically in our 6-week visit of like, it's going to be mama led.
mama's favorite positions. As the cervix is doing weird things. We don't know what that thing is at this point. Like, let her run the show because your favorites might not be great right now. Lots of good lube. Like, even if you've never used lube before, get the good shit for your nightstand postpartum. Like, that should be a part of your mama care package. I always say pop a Motrin just because things have been tender and no friction for a long time. And it shouldn't hurt, but it might be a little discomfort, a little newness the first few times. So I'm always like those things. And then to partners, I usually say initiate touch without the intention of getting laid. So just like touching the boobs, just like petting, kissing, cuddling, holding, that'd get her there faster than you trying to actually, your intent to get laid. So I'm like, even if it doesn't anything but a good like middle school makeout session, fine.
Right.
She's going to feel safer for the next time, you know, and that is the investment you're making. And so I'd say start there. But for the mama who's just not feeling it in her body, that's fine. It tends to be a lot longer for many people. That 6 weeks is an arbitrary number, is made up. It means nothing. It is not a clearance to get your groove back on unless you're ready. There's some folks who are dying to have sex. More power to them. Yeah. Others are like, do I have to? Can we not tell them? And I'm like, well, we don't want to broach that conversation.
Oh my God.
We will tell him, and we'll tell him no and why.
Oh my
God.
I know
that
it
just might be longer.
Oh my gosh, Jessica, this has been so inspiring for me. I feel like I'm going to walk away today and just be like remembering some of the things that you said. I'm like, hell yeah. I feel so empowered.
I'm such an empowered woman right now.
I know, me too. I'm just going to run out and go have sex. Whee! No, I feel.
Go find your libido.
I know. Yeah. I'm like, where's that vibrator? Woo! Anyway, I have loved this conversation and I love what you said about just like talking to our teens and what really consent looks and feels like, and just like taking back ownership of your body and your feelings and all those special things. Love that we can come to our midwife to talk about sexual health. Didn't even know that. So you have been just a world of knowledge and wisdom. And I just think you're so special. So thank you very much for joining us today on the Mother Days. You've been the best. Yay.
We love you. I love you. Thank you. Thank you. Daisies, you have been listening to the Mother Days podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and go check out Jessica Diggs. You can go on to her Instagram and it's at Jessica Diggs, D-I-G-G-S. And she has a Substack. You can subscribe. You can get all of this information all of the time, which is amazing. She also has just fantastic website and posts, and follow along with her journey. And if you're anywhere near her, then you can contact her and have her in your back pocket as well. We love you, Daisies. Thank you so much, Jessica. Thank you so much for your time and for being here today. And I'm just so grateful that you came into my life.
Yay!
Bye!
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 At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.